president. We need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
One on ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. Ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm Nairn. There's no one that can...
Yo! And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. Coming straight from the side, going down, audio shop talk right in your ear hole, brought to you right here on the Freedom Train Network by yours truly, Joseph Ward, a.k.a. that dude that's still walking out of your mother's bedroom when you're going to use the bathroom at night. Tide go down. Don't stop, get it. Pop that ass or up. Hey man, I'm excited. It's been a minute. My bad. Had all type of issues. My computer stopped working for a minute. Internet was messed up, all types of stuff. But I'm back. Verse 5, and you know it's their life. Can't nobody gonna keep me down, because I got to come up and thrive. I hit y'all with the bars. Yeah, man, so this is episode 22 of the Fix Sports Podcast, and it's subsequently the last show of 2018. Right? So, happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. Merry Hanukkah if you celebrate Hanukkah. Merry Kwanzaa if you celebrate Kwanzaa. Whatever you celebrate, Merry to you. Amen. Merry New Year. Merry New Year. Yeah. Merry New Year. It's December 31st, going down 2018. I remember thinking that the year 2000 wasn't even real. And now we in 2018. And it's going down. So, you know, Joseph Ward right here, your host of the Fix Sports Podcast right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com, where it go down and stay down. Remember, Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through the African History Book Series, the African History Blog Series, the African History Curriculum App, which is available in the Google Play Store. Go to the Google Play Store and type in On the Shoulders of Giants and the app should come up. The On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, as well as in-person lectures, educational classes, keynote sessions, speaking sessions, whatever you need. Just did a Kwanzaa celebration last night, set it down, did a trivia, all types of stuff. Allow people to learn more about African history and why they need to learn about the stories of the people in our past, because like Marcus Garvey said, and I'm paraphrasing, if you don't know your roots, and well, no tree can grow without roots, basically. No tree can go without roots. And same thing with people, you can't grow without your roots. So visit www.ontheshoulders1.com or www.ontheshoulders.org to get your information about On the Shoulders of Giants, where it go down. And remember, On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 3, South America, is coming soon. So if you haven't gotten the first two volumes, Volume 1, North America, or Volume 2, South America, Central America, make sure you get Volume 3, South America. That way you can be caught up and learn about different people throughout the diaspora. Once again, www.ontheshoulders1.com or www.ontheshoulders.org. Yes, yes, yes. And also remember, On the Show the Giants is on Patreon, and they need your help. The Fix is also on Patreon, and we need your help. So go to patreon.com/OTSOG to support On the Show the Giants, as well as patreon.com/TheFix, because we need your support. Without you, we are nothing. So give you a little rundown on what we're talking about today on this last show of the year. So we got a little HBCU segment, a whole little section, right? So we got three things going into our HBCU spotlight as well as HBCU news. So our HBCU spotlight, of course, North Carolina A&T University. They won the 2018 Celebration Bowl, so we got to show them some love. The 2018 Harlan Trophy, they have a win in the Harlan Trophy. I guess you could say it's Black College Football Heisman. So we're going to give you the winner of that. Just this past weekend, Texas Southern beat Texas A&M in the basketball game, so we're going to talk about that. Now, HBCU news, former Little League World Series star Monet Davis is going to Hampton. So we're going to talk about that. The Women's Tennis Association approves Serena Williams' cat suit and adds protections for returning mothers. And a lot of these stories you're going to hear kind of old. Remember, you know, I was out, but I had to come back and talk about these. Okay, so there's a black woman who became the first black woman to own a NASCAR team. So we're going to talk about that because that's big shit. You got to own your stuff. We'll talk a little boxing and talk about the Charlo twins, because the Charlo twins are two black twins who were storming their way through the ranks in boxing. And last Saturday, I believe, or Saturday before last, I think last Saturday, they debuted, they had their boxing debut, primetime boxing debut on Fox, and it didn't go as planned. So we're going to talk about that. Not doing off-topic shit because I want to keep this strictly sports for the last show of the year. So I want to keep it strictly sports. So we're going to talk a little college football playoff. Catch you up on the bowl games, talk about the games that just happened this past weekend, Alabama, Clemson, all them boys. We're going to talk about it, get into it, give you an update on the NFL week 16, and because week 17 just passed, so you know we're going to talk about week 17 on Thursday. So, and our Monday rant is aimed at a former Falcons running back who was caught molesting a 12-year-old family member. We finna go in on his ass. Hell, it's the last show of the year. Shit. Might as well leave it all. Leave it all in 2018, right? Might as well leave it all in 2018. So, man, let's go ahead and get started. Bust down with our HBCU spotlight. Break it down now. My bad. I just had to get into it. Hey, man, that song that be getting me hyped. So HBCU, so my bad. All right, I'm back. All right, so North Carolina A&T State University wins its third Celebration Bowl in 4 years. Going A&T out here balling, right? So North Carolina A&T Aggies captured its third Celebration Bowl title in 4 years with a 24-22 win over Alcorn State on Saturday afternoon in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, not just past Saturday, Cup Saturday. So, you know, give you that caveat. The Aggies led the entire game, but it was Malik Wilson's 79-yard game-winning return with 38 seconds left in the third quarter that gave A&T the 24-16 lead. And I was watching that dude, number 88. He caught that ball. Somebody got out of their lane. Everybody knows when you're on the kickoff team, the number one rule for the kickoff team is what? Stay in your lane. Is what? Stay in your lane. When you get out of your lane, somebody scores a touchdown. And that's what happened. 88 got that ball, found that seam, and it didn't look back, right? So Alcorn didn't take long to respond and cap the drive of 9 plays under 4 minutes with a 59-yard touchdown run by Noah Johnson at the 11:55 mark, cutting A&T's lead to 24-22. The Braves attempted a two-point conversion that would have tied the game. However, A&T's defense was able to stop the Braves. A&T set the tone early in the game and held a comfortable 17-6 advantage at halftime. Lamar Raynard threw a 17-yard pass to Zachary Leslie in the opening drive of the game to give the Aggies a 7-0 lead with 12:38 in the first quarter. Right, Alcorn cut in A&T's lead with a 29-yard field goal by Corey McCullough with less than 3 minutes in the first quarter. So we were like, oh, shit, what's going to happen? Oh, shit. So Noel Ruiz nailed the 36-yard field goal at the 8:33 mark in the second quarter, which stretched A&T's lead to 10-3, right? So with 53 seconds remaining in the half, Raynard connected with Elijah Bell on a 27-yard pass, pushing the Aggies to a 17-3 lead. So we like, oh, shit, man. A&T about to run away with this thing, right? But the Braves used 25-yard field goal by McCullough as time expired in the second quarter, cutting A&T's advantage to 17-6. So we still got a ball game, right? It ain't over. But Raynard was impressive in the win and was 18-30, passed for 292 yards. Leslie caught 6 passes and finished with 119 yards. A&T's kicking game was fueled by Wilson, who finished with 112 yards on 4 returns, including a touchdown. So the Aggies finished the season with a 10-2 record and his first Celebration Bowl win for head coach Sam Washington. Alcorn State finishes the season 9-4 overall. So one time for Coach Sam Washington, one time for everybody. On the A&T squad, man, they went through a lot this year. They lost to FAMU and Morgan State. I still don't understand how they lost those games. Nevertheless, they did. They persevered, and they got to the Celebration Bowl, and not only got to the Celebration Bowl, but got that victory. So you already know how we do this at HBCU Spotlight. Let's put our hands together. Put our hands together. Hey, I need somebody, someone to come and help me make this altar down. I can't catch it. I can't run it. They come and met me. Fight like a hunt. I need some blocks to hit them scocks. And when I think about them 6 points, it makes me wanna. I forgot what I was. But yeah, there you go. There you go. One time for North Carolina A&T, as you know. They just be balling, man. I've been covering them all year. They just be balling, man. So shout out to A&T. All right, further along in our HBCU spotlight, we're talking about the 2018 Harlem Trophy winner, and we want to find out who won the Harlem Trophy. We want to find out who won that Harlem Trophy. So let's find out. Hey man, hit him with the drum roll, please. And the 2018 winner of the Harlan Hill Trophy goes to Ferris State's Jeru Campbell, who is the D2 Football Player of the Year. Jeru. All right, so the Little Rock Touchdown Club, in conjunction with the Great American Conference, announced Ferris State junior quarterback Jeru Campbell as the winner of the 2018 Harlan Hill Trophy as the Division II College Football Player of the Year. Campbell received 202 total points, 76 points clear of Valdosta State's Rogan Wells. Notre Dame College's Jaleel McLean finished third, the second highest placing by a freshman in the award's 33-year history, bested only by the second place showing of Texas A&M Kingsville's Johnny Bailey in 1986. So this is a nice little picture of Jeru Campbell, right? Division II Sports Information Directors acts as voters for the award. A total of 113 SIDs participated in the final voting. The point system of 3 points for the first place vote, 2 for the second, and 1 for the third. So Campbell, who has led the Bulldogs to a 15-0 record into whatever Saturday it was, Division II National Championship game, earned 47 first place votes and appeared on 83 of 113 ballots. He becomes the 8th Hill winner to also play in the Division II National Championship game in the same season that he won the award. 6 of the previous winners, Jeff Brinton from North Dakota State, Chris Sidmon of North Dakota. Oh, so this, the Harlan Hill, I'm guessing it's the Division II or the whatever national Division II Player of the Year award. So maybe not the HBC, but Division II Player of the Year award. He becomes the eighth winner. So you got Jeff Bentram of North Dakota State in 1986, Chris Sindorm of North Dakota State in 1990, Randy West, Pittsburgh State in 1991, Ronald McKenna of North Alabama in 1995, Kurt Ames of Grand Valley State in 2002, and last year's recipient, Texas A&M Commerce's Luis Perez, have led their teams to national championships after winning the Hill Trophy. Pittsburgh State's Ronald Moore, 1992, owns the distinction, the only Hill one to play on the losing team in the championship game. That ain't cool, but for the first time in 33-year history of the award, two of the top finishers will meet in the national title game. In the four previous instances, the winner and the runner-up met in the Division II playoff game. So that's what's up. So my man, J. Root Campbell, wins the 2018 Harlan Hill Trophy. So everybody put your hands together for the boy's name, J. Root. J. Root Campbell. Go J. Root. It's the birthday. Got my trophy. It's the birthday. In the championship. Go J. Root. One time for J. Root and everybody up on that Bulldog squad. J. Root. All right. So, the other day, some basketball had been played, and the HBCU team won the basketball game, right? So the headline is, balanced, Texas Southern wins on road, beats Texas A&M 88-73. So, and Texas A&M, last year, they're supposed to be good. Guess they ain't talking about that no more, huh? I guess Texas A&M ain't talking about that no more, huh? They lost to Texas Southern, huh? Them scoring 73 points, huh? Their coach might get fired, huh? They may not make the tournament, huh? They ain't got no clean draws on, huh? They be riding in the bins and losing to the teams, huh? All right, so Texas Southern has one of the most experienced teams in the nation. So when Texas A&M cut a 13-point halftime deficit to 4 with plenty of time remaining, there was no time to panic in the Tigers. Wow! TSU's Jeremy Cone responded to Texas A&M rally with a drive to the basket for two, but then a dunk before Jalen Patterson made a 3-pointer for a 7-0 run that pushed the Tigers, who are 5-8 on the season, on their way to their third victory over a Power 5 conference team on the road, and 88-73 victory over the Aggies, which happened on Saturday at Reed Arena, right? We were able to fight adversity. Got a lot of guys who have been doing it throughout their entire college career. So in a game when little adversity hits, we find a way to stick together and get through it, said Combs, a grad student who finished with 15 points. Or as Master People said, 15 points. The Tigers, who already had victories over Baylor and then number 18, Oregon. That's why I'm finna say, I feel like I've been talking about these boys, but Texas Southern been going through beating everybody, right? Texas A&M, Baylor, and Oregon got badly scoring with five players in double figures to end the Aggies' five-game win streak, four of which were at home. So they need to keep playing D1 teams because they 5-8 on the year. So Patterson, the grad student who played at LSU, had 20 points for the Tigers. TSU also got a big boost off the bench from a TCU transfer, Sean Olden, with 13 points. Delvocio Butler added 17 points for the Tigers. We had a hard time guarding them, Texas A&M coach Billy Kennedy. That's what he said. We had a hard time matching up with them man-to-man, and they outplayed us. The big kid, 7-2 Trayvon Reed, made it three at the beginning of the game, and it seemed as if everything they threw up, they were making. So they were, as the young boys say, they was wet. I don't say that, but that's what the young boys say. Texas A&M, who's 6-5, was paced by Wendell Mitchell with 21, and Savion Flagg, who broke out of a slump, scored 17 points. He added a team-high 9 rebounds and 6 assists. Savion, when we make 9 threes and only turn it over 13 times, usually we've won games like that, but they outscored us, and that's where we really struggled, Kennedy said. Their physicality was impressive, and they have SEC-caliber players really at every position. Reed finished with 13 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 blocks, and he altered the number of Aggie shots on the inside. One time for Reed, Texas Southern shot 60% in the first half and were 6 of 14 from behind the arc to lead 46-33 at the break. Butler had 11 first half points, 5, and an 18-7 run to finish the half. In that ass, knee deep, right? We've got some guys who are really good shooters. Unfortunately, we've been shooting it great this year, but we didn't have shots go down tonight. We've had a good balance of outside and inside attacks, said Texas Southern coach Johnny Jones. One time for Johnny. In the opening half, the Aggies were only 4 of 15 from behind the arc. Brandon Mahan, their leading three-point shooter, was 0 for 4 from distance. TJ Starks had 3 of the 3s and 11 points off the bench in the opening 20 minutes. He finished with 14, and Chris Mekowulu added 11. So the big picture is Texas A&M, all the good work the Aggies had done during that five-game win streak was erased. Not only had the Aggies won 5 straight, they appeared to be playing better with each win as the team adjusted without the senior star, Admon Gilder, right? So, who was out with the blood clot. One good thing for Texas A&M is Coach Billy Kennedy has obviously settled on the 8-player rotation he wants to take into the Southeast Conference schedule. But, hey, you can't go in the SEC play losing to Texas Southern, right? So the big picture from Texas Southern is the Tigers beat their third Power Conference team and were heading to the Southwestern Athletic Conference with plenty of confidence while going for the 7th straight conference title and first with first-year coach Johnny Jones. With five senior grad students in starting lineup, including 7'2" Trayvon Reed, TSU will have the edge of talent, experience, and height over the rest of its opponents. So we're going to see how that go with Trayvon Reed, and Johnny Jones. So one time for Texas Southern. Put your hands together! Sitting in the ghetto thinking about how my homie passed away. Doing knockdown with a triple gold. Unless I made my four roll. How could it be? Somebody took my four from me. My best friend's gone. And I'm so all alone. I just felt that. I was listening to the blues. I was at the Kwanzaa celebration yesterday, and they had this older guy who was playing the blues, and he was killing that. Friend is gone. Ooh, friend is gone. I'm from the South, man. I like the blues. I ain't gonna lie. All right, so HBCU news. Former Little League star Monet Davis, she decided to play softball for Hampton University. I have to say they're the real HU. How is she going to Hampton? Monet Davis, who rocked to stardom in the Little League World Series, will attend Hampton University and play softball. Her parents told the Philadelphia Tribune. In 2014, Davis became the first girl to pitch her team to a Little League World Series victory while playing for Philadelphia's Tanner Youth Baseball Association. They tried to talk about she was too old. They thought about everything while she was out there whooping on a little whiteboard. She went on to become a 3-4 star at Springside Chestnut Hill Academy in Philadelphia, playing basketball and soccer in addition to softball. Hampton coach Angela Nicholson told the Daily Press that Davis, the senior, won't be pitching when she joins the Pirates in the fall. She's a middle infielder. As you could imagine, she has great hands and a great transfer, Nicholson told the newspaper. Hitting-wise, she already has a nice lift on her ball and understands the concept of gap-to-gap. She has great mechanics, and she's fast. She's very athletic. Davis's parents, Lakeisha and Mark Williams, told the Tribune that Davis has picked Hampton over Bethune-Cookman University Coppin State University, Southern University, the University of Massachusetts, and the University of Pennsylvania because of the communications program. But she could have came to FAMU, B. What you mean, B? She could have came to FAMU, B. Communications, B. Softball, B. Come on, B. She could have came to FAMU, B. You ain't looking at FAMU, B. Following the Little League World Series, Davis garnered accolades appearing on the cover of Sports Illustrated and starred in Spike Lee directed car commercial. Her jersey is displayed in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and she threw out the ceremonial first pitch before Game 4 of the 2014 World Series. I know she doesn't want it all about her, and neither do we, Nicholson told the Daily Press. We want her to have a great experience and be like everybody else. But her status will come along with her. The press will come along with her. Whether we want it or not, we're blessed to have her, and we're excited for everything that will promote Hampton University. Hey, I go straight to protection mode. I fight anybody who run up on her. All press, all paparazzi, all y'all people come up on Monet with that crazy stuff. You're going to catch these hands. That's how I would be. So shout out to Monet. She going to HBCU too, man. HBCU. So, you know, we got to show love. The Women's Tennis Association approves Serena. I'm saying it like I'm one of the kids who can't pronounce my R's. So the Women's Tennis Association approves Serena Williams' cat suit adds protections for returning mothers. So let's read the story before I bring out a guest speaker. To talk about this topic, because Serena looked good in that cat suit. I said, Serena looked good in that cat suit. Girl, you look good once you cat that suit up. Did that come out right? I don't know. The Women's Tennis Association, or the WTA, addressed the pair of issues highlighted during Serena Williams' return to competitive tennis following her daughter's September 2017 birth. So her daughter's one over one. According to BBC Sports' Russell Fuller, any players who return from injury or childbirth can use their previous ranking to enter 12 tournaments over a three-year period. In addition, those players are guaranteed to avoid facing a seeded opponent in the opening round of a tournament. The WTA also amended its rules regarding clothing to allow for the black bodysuit Williams wore at the 2018 French Open with a bitch-ass man. We're talking about she can't wear the suit, even though they was looking at her booty. We know they was looking at her booty, but then we're talking about she can't look at the suit, but they was looking at her booty. Right. Williams missed nearly the entire 2017 Women's Tennis Association season due to pregnancy complications and came back at the BNP Paribas Open in March. After her maternity leave, she fell to 491st in the WTA rankings and was unseeded for the French Open. Victoria Azarenka gave birth to her son in December 2016 and missed all but two events in the 2017 WTA calendar. She argued that mothers who are making their returns should have protections regarding their ranking. I feel that it's unfair to see top-tier moms who return, she said, per tennis.com's Jonathan Scott. When someone is giving birth to a kid, it's more than a sport. Like I said, it's something very special in this life, and I have no problems if someone is leaving. Number one in the world to give birth and come back to take the seat at the tournament. Fuller clarified the new rules that allows for individual tournaments to seed players, but the WTA's decision addresses the concerns Williams' situation raised. The 23-time Grand Slam winner turned heads at Roland Garros when she donned her bodysuit, which was dubbed the cat suit. She explained she wanted to send a message with her wardrobe, and the message was gladly received, probably in the wrong way by me, but I received it. Thank God Almighty I received that message, right? Williams added the compression the bodysuit provided served a physical benefit. She had blood clots before and after her pregnancy, and she told reporters the bodysuit would help her blood flow on the court. Bernard, whatever his last name is, president of the French Tennis Federation, drew criticism in August when he said the tournament would ban similar outfits and defending In defending the move, Bernard said, one must respect the game and the place. Fuck you, Bernard. You don't even, you just like, I don't want her to wear the bodysuit because she's a black woman. Basically, just go ahead and say it, Bernard Gilda Coochie. I'm going to call you Bernard Gilda Coochie because you a coochie-ass motherfucker. Fuck you, Bernard. But one time for the Women's Tennis Association for being like, Bernard, old bitch, man. Fuck what Bernard talking about. Serena, you can wear your cat suit and we can protect these mothers out here. Because Bernard is a bitch. Gilda Coochie face-ass Bernard. Bernard Magazine, his wife left him for a younger man or a younger woman. Bernard mad because his condoms are always falling off. Bernard mad because he impotent. Fuck Bernard. But one time for the Women's Tennis Association, Serena get to wear a bodysuit, a compression suit, and she get to keep on dominating. So. And they have protections for mothers who come back and women come back from injury. So look update. All right, so get to some crazy shit, right? Arkansas linebacker was arrested on drug and weapons charges. Let's see why. Why was the brother arrested on drug and weapons charges? We're going to find out. Why was he arrested for drugs and weapons? What did he do? Is he a fool? We don't know. Cause the article flow. And I'm trying to learn. So baby, let me see. I got the blue. I wanna make flurry nuggets. And I'm lying, I want a pretty old girl with a big behind. And everybody wants to know how I do the show. I got the blues. All right. So, the headline reads, Razorbacks linebacker arrested on drugs, gun charges, suspended indefinitely from the team. So let's see who, what, where, when, why, and how. But, oh boy, that's, yeah. So, Demetrius D. Walker, sophomore linebacker on the Arkansas Razorback football team, was arrested in Fayetteville on Tuesday, whichever Tuesday this was, on possession of a controlled substance charges and simultaneous possessions of drugs and guns, according to the Fayetteville police, and he has been suspended indefinitely from the team, according to the University of Arkansas. So he had controlled substances and drugs? So he had, like, weed and coke? Weed and pills? Or something like that? And guns? Bang, bang! According to Sergeant Anthony Murphy of the Fayetteville Police, Walker was arrested on Tuesday on charges of delivery of a controlled substance, marijuana, possession of a controlled substance with the intent to deliver marijuana, possession of a controlled substance with the intent to deliver Xanax, Southern pills, simultaneous possession of drugs and firearms, and possession of drug paraphernalia. God damn, son, he was a straight D-boy, huh? Boy, he was a wannabe D-boy, huh? A preliminary report shows police found 95.8 grams of marijuana, 40 Xanax pills, several individual and sandwich baggies, a digital scale, and a DPMS Panther Arms model AR-15 rifle with a loaded magazine in the residence of 1399 North Footrail Drive in Fayetteville. He was getting it in, huh? Dope boys in the trap, nigga. Thug nigga, drug dealer. Where you at? Where you at, nigga? Dope boys in the trap, said I said the dope boys in the trap. Said all started because he got arrested. According to the police detectives from the 4th Judicial District, Drug Task Force purchased marijuana drug doing undercover operations for Walker with assistance from a confidential informant. Ooh, snitching. They got you with the snitch. They got you with the snitch, man. The purchase was made within the past 4 months, police say. Man, you should have quit, bitch. You should have quit. On Tuesday, December 12th, the task force executed a search warrant for Walker's residence on Footrail Drive. During a search, police said detectives found 56 grams of marijuana, then 6 more grams of marijuana with baggies and a digital scale in the kitchen cabinet. They also found 40 Xanax pills and sandwich baggies on the kitchen counter. Police found an AR-15 rifle with a loaded magazine next to his bedroom door, according to the report. Walker was arrested and taken to the Washington County Detention Center, and Fayetteville was booked into the jail about 10:50 p.m. Tuesday, he was scheduled for a hearing at 12:45 p.m. on that Friday. The University of Arkansas Department of Intercollegiate Athletics released the following statement. This is my white man voice. We are aware of the charges involving Demetrius Walker, a student athlete on our football team. The student athlete has been suspended from our football program indefinitely, and we will continue to monitor the situation and cooperate fully with any related legal and campus processes. Our continued expectation is that our student athletes conduct themselves and represent the University of Arkansas in an appropriate manner at all times. And that is the end of that article. Come on, Demetrius. See, so, brother Shabazz, take it away. I appreciate you, Brother Joseph. See, what the young brother has failed to realize is that he was conjoined into networks of evil that, you know, spurred him into the peddling of these narcotics and these controlled substances that led to his incarceration because he wanted to live a life of the white man. He was enamored by the white man's trinkets and shiny objects which magnified his infatuation to possess those things within his hands physically and feel on the inside completeness. But whenever your dream is within the scope of the white man's American dream, my brother, you are only going to live a nightmare. And my brother, dear Demetrius D. Walker, you will now be living a nightmare, my brother, because your football career is derailed, my brother. Your brain cells did not fire off enough information in your mind for you to understand that me being a D-boy, as they say, in the streets, on the corners, a D-boy to sell these substances and these narcotics to these people, these customers, and work to enhance their or to alter their state of consciousness because they are unhappy with their state of being, my brother. And so you, in a sense, are unhappy with your state of being because you are willing to put your freedom on the line to get a few fast dollars, my brother. If it don't make dollars, then it don't make sense. But if you're worth your freedom, then it ain't worth shit. You hear me? You heard me? You holler. I'm gone. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Brother Shabazz. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Brother Shabazz. Get on that ass with Brother Shabazz. We're on that ass with Brother Shabazz. You heard me? If you ain't heard me, you ain't heard me. You heard me? All right, so let's move on, man. Let's move on to our stories. Let's move on to our stories. So NASCAR. NASCAR got a black woman who owns her own team. I say NASCAR got a black woman who owns her own team. I say NASCAR got a black woman who owns her home team. Thank you, thank you. All right, so Melissa Harville LeBron. She's the first black woman to own a NASCAR team. She got a look on her face like she don't play the radio with y'all suckers out here, with y'all sucker MCs, right? So Melissa Harville LeBron never imagined that her entrepreneurial pursuits and ambitions would lead her to make history as the first African-American woman to solely own a race team licensed by NASCAR. However, LeBron, a 47-year-old single mother raising three biological biological children, as well as her siblings, four kids, stated her career in the entertainment industry as an intern at Sony Music. In 2005, she launched her own music label while working for New York City's Department of Corrections office. Nearly a decade later, she suffered from a severe asthma attack that forced her into early retirement and inspired her to take a risk of launching a multifaceted entertainment company, WM Stone Enterprises, Inc. in 2014. However, LeBron says her journey into auto racing began unexpectedly when she took her sons to a NASCAR experience at a Charlotte Super Speedway in hopes of deterring them from taking up such a dangerous hobby. Instead, the experience only piqued her son's interest and eventually led her investing hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop her own team. I got invited to a NASCAR experience in it, and I brought my boys along thinking that it would discourage them from driving, she told Black Enterprise. But it did not work that way. They drove 149 miles per hour and 150 miles per hour during the first session and loved every minute of it while she watched in awe. Nonetheless, seeing the passion and joy that her sons had for racing compelled Harvey LeBron to want to help them follow their heart. That's why you got to have a good woman. It's some good women out here. One time for these black women out here be holding it down, right? However, as she explored the sports history, she noticed its notorious lack of diversity. There were two little to no drivers of color, let alone an owner, that motivated her all the more to fill the gap. That's why I'm going to be a black owner. And I always had a dream of being a black owner of an NFL team. So it's either I'm going to either own my own NFL team or I'm going to start my own football league. So I got money like that. I'm a baller. I'm a millionaire. Right? She created E2 Northeast Motorsports under the umbrella of WM Stone Enterprises Incorporated. The E2 Northeast Motorsports team became the first multicultural team to race competitively in NASCAR, with four black and Latino drivers, two in the Camping World Truck Series and two in the NASCAR's Wheeling All-American Series. Two of the drivers are brothers, and Harvey LeBron's sons, Eric and Inicio. Besides making history, Harvey LeBron celebrated another victory on February 16th when her team ran its first official race in the Camping World Truck Series at Daytona. Scott Stenzel started the race in an E2 Northeast Motorsports Chevrolet, making his return to the NCWTS following a three-year hiatus. He came in 15th place at Daytona International Speedway. In a statement released earlier this month, Harvey LeBron called it an honor to partner with Stenzel and the NCWTS team, Cops Motorsports. This team truly exemplifies diversity that is sure to attract the younger multicultural fan base. And it's an honor to announce that Stenzel is now part of the racing family. I ain't gonna have to keep it all black, but see, one thing, let me say this. Black people, brown people, other people don't have a problem with diversity. It's white people who have a problem with diversity. So I do wish black people would stop. Say, hey, look, we're diverse. Hey, we always been diverse. White people have a problem with diversity. We don't have to prove to anybody that we're diverse. We've always been diverse. It's white people who have the diversity issues. So stop trying to play up that, hey, look at us being diverse. We've always been like that. Always. Black people the ones who travel to other people's lands and respect that shit. Right? In addition to granting opportunities to people of color, Harvey LeBron wishes to see more become sports owners, particularly of NASCAR teams. It is important for a culture to push generational wealth to our children. It is important to lead by example. All too often our children see negative images of our culture, and I think it's very important for people of our culture to actually succeed in business, she said. So, according to a representative from NASCAR, while Harvey LeBron is the first black woman to be a sole owner of a NASCAR team, Jennifer Satterfield Seeger was the first woman of color to co-own a NASCAR team. So one time for Jennifer Satterfield Seeger and one time for Miss Harville LeBron. Melissa Harville LeBron, my bad. And one time for Miss Melissa. Getting it in. You got to fight the pops. That beat. Huh. All right, so a little bit of boxing, right? The Charlo twins, Jermell and Jamal are the Charlo twins. And as I said in the opening, the Charlo twins have been, you know, running through their division. We have the 154 and 160 pound divisions. So the headline is Charlo twins' big PBC on Fox debut was nearly a big disaster. So let's read why. The Saturday night in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center was supposed to be a massive night for the Charlo twins. Jamal and Jermell Charlo were supposed to send a message to the 154 and 160 pound division. Instead, the divisions were made more of a mess. The heavily favored brothers were expected to blow past their opponents, but the Charlos instead finished the evening 1-1 with the controversy abound or fight. Right. It should have been 2-0. Jermell Charlo, who lost his WBC junior middleweight title to Tony Harrison, in my opinion, was robbed. I watched the fight and I didn't think Tony Harrison did enough to beat Jermell Charlo. I thought Jermell Charlo did come out. He didn't start strong. He didn't start as strong as he should have, maybe, as people would have expected. Tony Harrison was great at countering a lot of Jermell's punches in the beginning and throughout the fight. He did a good job of countering, but Jermell put that thing on. Jermell was a little more active. Jermell was hitting him with a couple more shots, more power shots. I think Jermell landed a high percentages of punches, all these different things, but the judges scored the fight in favor of Harrison, 116 to 112. For one judge, and two judges had 115 to 113. I thought he got robbed. I really do. I thought Jermell got robbed. I didn't think Tony Harrison won that fight. So he outlanded Tony Harrison, 160 to 128. Harrison out-jabbed Charlo, 57-52, but the latter owned a significant advantage in power shots, 108-71. Harrison landed a high percentage of his punches on and focused on countering, but it's difficult to see him beating Charlo here, let alone by four rounds. The problem here is that the fight was supposed to be close. So the fight wasn't close, but Charlo didn't lose. So this in this article is saying Jermell looked so focused on scoring some sort of statement making KO that he abandoned his boxing skill that helped lead him to the 154 pound title. When it was over, Jermell made his feelings about the judge's decision, but vowed to come back stronger. He was robbed. He should have won that fight. It may not have been a convincing victory, but nevertheless, I thought Jermell won the fight. So his brother Jamal didn't have a great fight either. I thought Jermell, saying how I felt like Jermell may have had the better fight of both fights, even though he lost, but Jermell was robbed. But Jamal beat his opponent, Korobov. So we got Jermell who lost and Jamal who won the fight. So Jamal took to the ring to defend his WBC interim middleweight title against Matt Kovarov, a late replacement for Willie Monroe Jr. Monroe Jr. was pulled after testing positive for a banned substance. Jamal got past Kovarov, but it was a struggle, right? Fox ring and analyst Mike Coppinger said he scored the fight even. The official judges gave Jamal the decision with the score of 119 to 108, 116 to 112, and 116 to 112 in all in the champion's favor. So Korobov, who is an experienced pro with an impressive amateur background, made it competitive throughout. Jamal seemed a bit off his game, but his speed and overall athleticism allowed him to beat the challenger to the punch repeatedly. Still, no one thought this fight would be close or go the distance for that matter. Charlo rocked Kovarov badly in the 12th, but couldn't put him away. While he won, it's safe to say he didn't emerge as more highly regarded world title contender. So, most of the biggest thing is people are disappointed that the Charlo twins didn't come out and put on a show that they expected, that they saw the way the Charlo twins fought up to this point. Nevertheless, Jamal got his win, but Jamel got robbed, and I want to see Jamel and Tony Harris fight again. Because, I thought Jamel won. I thought Jamel beat Tony Harris. I thought Tony Harris gave him a good fight, but I thought Jamel won. Jamal won his fight, but Jamal didn't have as an impressive showing as Jamel. But nevertheless, they both Jamal got his win. Jamel didn't. So that's what happened in the fight between the Charlo twins against Harrison and Korobov. So, I mean, y'all got to watch this boxing. Boxing is pretty cool, man. Boxing is pretty damn cool. Y'all got to make sure y'all stay up on it. And all the fights ain't live, but, you know. Yeah, I know. There it is. All right, man, so let's talk some football, man. Let's talk some college football. College football. Let's talk. So we got the bowl games. And then we have college football playoff games, right? So let's start with these bowl games. Let's start with the Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl. So that game between Arizona State and Fresno State. Fresno State got a 31-20 victory. Fresno State, Fresno State was 12-2. Now they got the Mitsubishi Motor Bowl. Shit. But they beat Arizona State. Herm Edwards was in his first year as a coach, led Arizona State to a 6-7-6 record. So that's pretty, you know. I see you, Herm. I see you. All right, so next we had the Auto Nation Cure Bowl, and Tulane beat Louisiana 41-24. Tulane ends the season 7-6. Louisiana ends the season at 7-7. Then we had the New Mexico Bowl presented by Progressive. And Utah State versus North Texas. So Utah State gets the win 52-13. Utah State improves its record to 11-2. North Texas falls to 9-4. Then we have the Raycon Media Camilla Bowl between Georgia Southern and Eastern Michigan. And Georgia Southern beat Eastern Michigan 23-21. Georgia Southern ends the season at 10-3. Eastern Michigan ends the season at 7-6. We have the R.L. Carriers New Orleans Bowl, which featured Middle Tennessee State versus Appalachian State. Appalachian State got that victory 45-13 over Middle Tennessee State. Appalachian State ends the year at 11-2, Middle Tennessee State at 8-6. So we also got the Cherry Bundy Boca Raton Bowl versus UAB, which is UAB versus Northern Illinois. And UAB put that thing on Northern Illinois 37-13. UAB ended the season at 11-3, Northern Illinois at 8-6. So the DXL Frisco Bowl was between San Diego State and Ohio, and Ohio beat shit out of San Diego State. They blanked their ass 27-0. Ohio ends the season 9-4. San Diego ends the season 7-6. So then we got the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl between Marshall and South Florida. South Florida didn't come and represent the state. They lost 20-38 to Marshall. Marshall ends the season 9-4. South Florida ends the season at 7-6. So then we got the Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl between FIU Florida International and Toledo. Florida International represented the state right, beat Toledo 35-32. So Florida International ends the season at 9-4, Toledo at 7-6. We got Western Michigan versus BYU in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, and Western Michigan got their ass whooped by BYU 49-18, and they both end the season at 7-6. So then we got the Jarrett Brick Birmingham Bowl between Memphis and Wake Forest, and it was an interesting game, a hard-fought game, but Wake Forest came out with the victory of 37-34 over Memphis. Wake Forest end the season at 7-6, Memphis end the season at 8-6. The Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl between Army and Houston, and Houston got their ass whooped by Army. Army put 70 points on the board to score 70-14. Houston end the season at 8-5, Army at 11-2. The Dollar General Bowl is between Troy and Buffalo, and Troy beat Buffalo 42-32. Buffalo ends the season at 10-4, Troy at 10-3. Then we have the SoFi Hawaii Bowl between Louisiana Tech and Hawaii. And Hawaii lost their own bowl game, which they usually do. Well, they do a lot. 31-14, Hawaii ends the season at 8-5. La Tech ends the season at 8-6. Hawaii ends the season at 8-6. La Tech 8-5. Then we have the Quick Lane Bowl between Minnesota and Georgia Tech. Minnesota beat Georgia Tech 34-10. They both end the season at 7-6. The Cheez-It Bowl between TCU and California, low-scoring game, hard defensive game. TCU beat Cal 10-7, and they both end the season at 7-6. So the ServPro First Responder Bowl was canceled. That was between Boston College and Boise State. That was canceled. We got the Walk-Ons Independent Bowl between Duke and Temple, and Duke beat Temple 56-27. Duke end the season at 8-5. Actually, both teams end the season at 8-5. Then we got the New Era Pinstripe Bowl between Wisconsin and Miami. So, you know, us down here in Florida trying to see what Miami's going to do. Miami got their ass whooped. They didn't show up. Miami lost 35-3. And Miami's defense is hard, cold. Probably best defense for athletes and players. But their offense trash, so defense get tired. So Miami lost 35-3 to Wisconsin. Miami ends the season at 7-6, Wisconsin at 8-5. Then we have the Academy Sports Outdoor Texas Bowl between Baylor and Vanderbilt, and Baylor beats Vanderbilt 45-38. Baylor ends the season at 7-6, Vanderbilt at 6-7. And we have the Valero Alamo Bowl between Iowa State and Washington. Washington State beat Iowa State 28-26. Washington State end the season at 11-2. Iowa State end the season at 8-5. We have the Camping World Bowl between Syracuse and West Virginia. Syracuse beat West Virginia 34-18. Syracuse end the season at 10-3. West Virginia 8-4. Purdue lost to Auburn in the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. Purdue lost 63-14 over Auburn to Auburn. Auburn put up 28 points in the first quarter and the second quarter, and the game was over by halftime. So, yeah. Auburn ends the season at 8-5, Purdue at 6-7. I bet you little buddy from Purdue scored, though. Then we got some of these big dog games, some of them. But before I get to that, let me do the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl between Arkansas and Nevada. Arkansas State and Nevada, and Nevada beat Arkansas State 16-13. Nevada ends the season at 8-5, Arkansas at 8-5. We have the Belk Bowl between Virginia and South Carolina. South Carolina forgot they was in the SEC and lost to Virginia 28-0. And Virginia ends the season at 8-5, South Carolina at 7-6. Now, they got the game between them Gators, them Florida Gators and the Michigan Wolverines. And the Gators remembered that they was from the SEC. And they put that thing on them damn Wolverines 41-15. I was watching this game, and Florida was in control the whole game. There was not one point in this game where I thought Michigan was going to make a move to get the lead and win the game. 41-15 score, both Florida and Michigan end the season at 10-3. So the big dog game, first game of the college football playoff. And that was the Peach Bowl between Florida and Michigan. So the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic was between Clemson and Notre Dame, and Clemson dropped a whole nutsack on Notre Dame, 30-3. So let's look at some statistics, right? So Ian Book and Trevor Lawrence, right? For the quarterback. So Book is the quarterback for Notre Dame. Lawrence is the quarterback for Clemson. Book for Notre Dame went 17-34, 160 yards, one touchdown. QBR was 20.5. Trevor Lawrence went 27-39, 327 yards, three touchdowns, QBR of 76.9. Now, Trevor Lawrence is a good quarterback. Trevor Lawrence is a very, very, very good quarterback. I have underestimated him throughout the season, but Trevor Lawrence, hey man, he get the job done. He's also on a team that has a sound defense, great running, great running back and good receivers to get the ball to. So all he got to do is do his thing. So running back Etienne had 14 carries, 109 yards, a touchdown. Receiving Ross had 6 catches, 148 yards, 2 touchdowns. Renfro, 4 catches, 62 yards. Higgins, 10 catches, 4 catches, 53 yards and a touchdown. Rodgers, 6 catches, 26 yards and a touchdown. So, you know, that's how it went. So Clemson moves on to the championship game, and their opponent will be Alabama, because Alabama put that thing on Oklahoma in the Capital One Orange Bowl semifinal. And it was Alabama had full control of this game. Don't let the score fool you. Oklahoma got a lot of comeback touchdowns and things. And we got to remember, Oklahoma has a very, very, very potent offense as well, but no defense. And that Big 12 defense showed up, and it showed up in Big 12 defense fashion. That's how Alabama. At halftime, the score was 31-10. Oklahoma put up 10 points in the third quarter to bring it close. But then both teams put up 14 points in the fourth quarter, which made the game 45-34. Alabama won the game. Alabama was in control the whole game. Alabama's defense looked good. Alabama's offense, they couldn't. It was time, the third quarter, Alabama's offense was stalled. But after that, it was on. So Kyler Murray went 19-37, 308 yards, 2 touchdowns. They had a QBR of 66.7. Tua Tagovailoa went 24-27. 318 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a 9.6 QBR. Jalen Hurts went 1-for-1, 10 yards, 94-point-whatever QBR. So this was the running game went for Oklahoma. So now, well, K. Murray for Oklahoma had 17 carries, 109 yards, and a touchdown. Now, Alabama, Josh Jacobs had 15 carries, 98 yards, no touchdowns. D. Harris had 13 carries, 48 yards, 2 touchdowns. Najee Harris, 6 carries, 45 yards, and a touchdown. Tua had 9 carries. Like, there's a play when Jacobs caught a pass out the backfield, just running through the lane. There's a safety for Oklahoma, number 20. Jacobs just run him straight over, scores the touchdown, and hurts the guy. Like, Alabama physically dominated Oklahoma in this game. So we have another matchup between Clemson and Alabama, and the question is, who's going to win? I think Clemson may have a bit of a better defense. Maybe. It may not. Maybe not. This is an interesting game because both teams are evenly matched. I'm not mad at who wins this game. This is an interesting game because it's an evenly matched game. Now, Alabama has more experience at quarterback, but not necessarily. Because Trevor Lawrence he didn't play in as many games this year, but Trevor Lawrence is a freshman. Tua is a sophomore. Tua played in the championship game. Now, Tua has championship game experience over Trevor Lawrence, but we're going to see if Trevor Lawrence can drop his nuts like Tua did last year and step up under the big lights, because now you're playing the big dog. So we're going to see. It's going to be interesting, man. I'm excited to see it. The national championship game, it's going to be beautiful, man. Monday, January 7th, it's going to be beautiful. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the big boys. Week 16 of the NFL season. Of course, you know this upcoming week is week 17, the last week of the NFL season. Bittersweet. But we got the playoffs coming up. So, week 16, the Tennessee Titans. Shout out to the Tennessee Titans for defeating the Washington Redskins 25-16. One time for Tennessee. The Baltimore Ravens continue their winning ways behind the legs of Lamar Jackson, a 22-10 victory over San Diego Chargers. I want to see the Chargers represent the AFC, because I want to see Philip make it to the Super Bowl. I actually want to see Philip win one. If the Cowboys don't win, don't go. I want to see Philip win. But the Chargers may end up playing the Cowboys in the Super Bowl, because how about them Cowboys winning that NFC East division with the 27-20 victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? How about them Cowboys? Woo! Get old Michael Strahan. The Vikings beat the Lions 27-9. The Falcons beat the Panthers 24-10 in the NFC South matchup. The Texans beat the Eagles Well, the Texans lost to the Eagles 30-32, but we still won the division. The Giants lost to the Colts 27-28. The Browns got another victory over the Bengals 26-18. So let me look at this. How many victories? The Cleveland Browns have 7 wins behind the arm of Baker Mayfield. I told y'all Baker was the truth, man. The Cleveland Browns, so far coming into week 17, are 7-7-1. I'm telling y'all, man, Baker Mayfield's truth, man. In this game, Baker went 27-37, 284 yards, 3 touchdowns, no pick. So, Baker Mayfield, man, I'm telling you, Cleveland Browns may be a long way away from, like, being contenders, but Baker Mayfield, I think they got their quarterback, right? If he don't take steps back next year, they got them quarterback. All right, so the Bills lost to the Patriots 24-12. And the Patriots lost shot scored, but we're going to talk about that next. The Packers beat the Jets 44-38. Jaguars beat the Dolphins 17-7. The Bears beat the 49ers 14-9. The Rams beat the Cardinals 31-9. Steelers lost to the Saints 31-28, which was a good game. The Raiders lost to the Broncos 27-14. And the Seahawks beat the Chiefs 38-31. So we're coming into week 17. See how it goes. So let's see if I can look at these standings. All right, so in the NFC, well, let me see if I can get playoff standings. Now, let me give them a Google on. Let me see NFL playoff standings. Okay, all right, NFL playoff picture 2019. Let me see. Let me see it. All right. On NFL.com, look at the playoff picture. So, come on, man. Give me what I need. All right. So, in the AFC, so far, the divisional rounds, so you will have the Chiefs with the number one seed, the Patriots with the number two seed. So far going into week 17. In the AFC, got the Saints with the number one seed and the Rams with the number two seed. The wild card for the AFC would be the Colts and the Ravens, and then the Colts and the Texans. Well, let me say it like this. All right, so for the AFC, the Chiefs are the projected first seed. All these are projections because week 17 isn't over. So Chiefs are the first seed. The Patriots are the second seed. The Texans are the third seed. The Ravens are the fourth seed. The Chargers are the fifth seed. And the Colts are the sixth seed. If the playoffs ended today. For the NFC, if the playoffs ended today, the Saints are the first seed. The Rams are the second seed. The Bears are the third seed. The Cowboys are the fourth seed. The Seahawks are the fifth seed. And the Vikings are the sixth seed. So, in the hunt, the NFC have the Eagles. And then for the AFC, the Steelers. And then the Titans in the hunt. But we'll see how that goes. We got to see how week 17. All right, so let's talk Josh Gordon. And we're talking football. Josh Gordon is no longer with the New England Patriots. And so we're talking about him focusing on his mental health. I don't know what's going on with Josh, so let's read. Prayers go out to him, though. Definitely send the prayers out to Josh. All right, Josh Gordon. The troubled wide receiver who appears to find solid football, who appeared to find solid footing and success in New England this season, said Thursday morning, and it was a couple Thursdays ago, that he was leaving the Patriots a few hours before the NFL announced that he'd been suspended indefinitely for violating the terms of his conditional reinstatement under the sports substance abuse policy. The league did not provide further details. Gordon, who was 27 years old, missed all of the 2015-2016 seasons because of suspensions related to substance abuse before being conditionally reinstated during the 2017 season. This would be his fifth suspension since he entered the league in 2012. This is a statement from Josh Gordon. I take my mental health very seriously at this point to ensure I remain able to perform at the highest level. I have recently felt like I could have a better grasp on things mentally. With that said, I will be stepping away from the football field for a bit to focus on my mental health. I would like to thank Coach Belichick, Mr. Kraft, as well as the countless others within the Patriots organization for their continued support. I want to thank my fans for their support as well as I continue down the path to getting back to 100%. So I take, yeah, so we read that. The Patriots, they support Gordon in his continued efforts to focus on his health, and then adding in a statement that his attempt to do so is a private and personal manner which we intend to respect. Gordon appears increasingly likely to be remembered as an example of unrealized football potential. He was drafted by the Cleveland Browns in the second round of the 2012 supplemental draft, having starred at Baylor in 2010 before being suspended from the team for off-the-field issues and transferred to Utah. As a second-year pro in 2013, he caught 87 passes for 1,600 yards, 9 touchdowns in 14 games, which projected to 1,800 yards over a 16-game season, a figure that would have been the second-best single season in total in NFL history. But he was suspended repeatedly under the league's substance abuse policy, and before this fall had played in only 10 regular season NFL games since his breakout season in 2013, and he balled out then. He was reinstated by the NFL in November of 2017 with Commissioner Roger Goodell saying the responsibility for his continued eligibility would be up to Gordon. Everyone, including Josh's teammates and coaches, the Browns ownership and organization, programs, professional, and all of us at the league office want him to have every opportunity to resume his career, to be successful in the NFL, Goodell said in a statement then. Whatever that happens, however, at the end of the day will depend on Josh. His commitment to sobriety and to reaching his goals in football and beyond will determine his success. It ultimately is up to Josh. Gordon played 5 games last season and returned to the Browns for all of 1 game in September, reportedly showing up late to the team's facility with a hamstring injury that, according to Sports, will suffer at a promotional event. With Cleveland's patience finally exhausted, the Browns traded the receiver to New England on September 17th for a conditional 5th-round pick. He played in 11 games with the Patriots, had 40 catches for a team-high 720 yards and 3 touchdowns, but he had just 1 catch for 19 yards and last week lost to the Steelers 4 days before his and the league's substance abuse subsequent announcement. Gordon, who practiced with the Patriots Wednesday, had become New England's number 2 option at wide receiver behind Julian Edelman. Chris Hogan, Philip Dorsett, and Cordarrelle Patterson will likely be relied upon in Gordon's absence. The 9-5 Patriots have looked shaky in recent weeks and currently trail the Houston Texans, but of course that's changed. So that's what's going on with Josh Gordon. We just pray for Josh Gordon and hope he get all the help and treatment that he needs. All right. Time for the Friday rant. Time for the Friday rant. The Monday rant. I'm talking about Friday. Time for the Monday rant. Monday, not Friday. So it's time for the Monday rant. And our rant is aimed at ex-NFL player who was found standing over a 12-year-old family member with his dick out and hard. A former college football star and Atlanta Falcons running back was arrested for having sex with a 12-year-old girl after his wife walked in on him exposing himself to the mob. He pulled his dick out on the 12-year-old. Around 5 a.m., Justin Crawford was spotted by his wife standing over the young girl in the living room while he had an erection. Crawford's wife, Shakia Crawford, later said she only saw him exposing himself and he immediately ran from the living room into the kitchen to cover up. When she later questioned her husband, he denied any wrongdoing. She then went back to bed with the hopes of revisiting the incident at that later time. Then Shakita took the 12-year-old to her child's mother, who then asked what happened. The girl reported she was asleep in the living room when Crawford came in and had her perform oral sex on him before they had intercourse. The girl was taken for a medical exam that included compiling a sexual assault kit to collect any DNA evidence. Detective Mark Scruggs testified in court. Crawford initially denied having intercourse with the girl, but he later admitted to detectives that the two had sex. He also claimed the intercourse was the girl's idea, according to Scruggs' testimony. A judge found probable cause to send Crawford's case to Muskogee Superior Court and ordered him held without bond, according to the newspaper. Crawford is now facing felony charges of incest, sodomy, and enticing a child for indecent purpose, jail record show. Crawford was named the Big 12 Newcomer of the Year in his senior season at West Virginia University, where he transferred from Northwest Mississippi College after sophomore season. During his time at junior college, fuck all this shit. So, all right, let's go by this piece by piece. So, Shaquita Crawford came into the living room and saw Justin Crawford with his dick out over a 12-year-old and immediately started asking questions. No, Shaquita. You're supposed to grab the closest thing to you and knock his ass out. Grab a knife and try to cut his meat off. That's what you're supposed to do, Shaquita. He got his meat out around the 12-year-old. And then you went back to bed. What? Come on, Shaquita. If that was my daughter, Shaquita, I'm fighting you, Shaquita. I can't trust my child's safety in your presence as an adult, because you are so entranced by your love with child molesting as Justin that you even considered his side of the story. You even considered what he said. A grown man got his meat out that's hard near a 12-year-old. There's no need to think about anything. He need to be fucked up, and you supposed to cut his meat off. Shaquita, you supposed to get the slicing. Shaquita, come on. Shaquita. Ain't that much love in the world, Shaquita. Ain't that much love in the world for you to be like, oh, Justin, well, what you doing with such and such with your meat out? Oh, then he going to run off, and then you going to go back to bed. So you're going to leave the girl in harm's way. You need your ass whooped, Shaquita. Shaquita, you need your ass whooped. You don't really get it. You walked in on Buddy with his meat out, meat hard, right over the 12-year-old. He run off. You go back to bed and leave the girl still in harm's way. So what happened when you went back to sleep? Did he fuck her again? Come on, Shaquita. You are not a competent adult with this, Shaquita, because ain't no way that little girl should be left along with that man, with that punk boy, simp ass bitch boy, and you just caught him with his meat out. He was butt naked. Dude butt ass naked with his meat out standing over 12-year-old, and you think it's appropriate to go back to bed with the dude with his meat out. Justin, what you doing with your meat out over 12-year-old, Justin? That's a young, that's a little bitty old girl, Justin. A little bitty old, you married. You in the NFL, you a ball player. You really got access to a lot of different women a brother like me may not have access to, right? But you hunching 12-year-olds. So not only did you force, you raped the 12-year-old. You raped her. You raped her, bitch boy. You raped her. You made her perform oral sex on you and then had vaginal sex. Unprotected vaginal sex with the 12-year-old. He probably shot a club up. Need to get her tested for pregnancy. Get her on the 72-hour pill. Need to get her a 72-hour PEP, the post-exposure prophylaxis pill. Need to get a 72-hour birth control pill. You need to do some testing. And the mother of the young girl need to get her into counseling ASAP. She need to beat Shaquita's ass. I'm talking about she got to beat Shaquita's ass. Whoop her ass. Whoop her ass. But also, get your daughter counseling. You have to get your daughter counseling. You have to get her counseling. ASAP, you have to get her counseling, because Justin, being a fuckboy, want to mess up this young girl's innocence. Want to mess up her. You want to disturb her peace and her safety. Then Buddy was like, nah, I ain't do it. I ain't have sex with her. Then come back and say, well, okay, I had sex with her, but it was her idea. Hold on a bit. So you telling me you such a fuckboy, you were such a fuckboy that a 12-year-old, let's say, I'm not saying that what he's saying is true, that the little girl tried him, right? But what I am saying is you are such a bitch boy, Justin, that according to your story, a 12-year-old tries to have sex with you and you go along with it, and you're a grown-ass man in your 20s. What type of grown man accepts a sexual advance from a 12-year-old. Let's just say, for some dumbass sake, that may have been true. I'm not saying it's true. I don't believe it's true. But let's just say it may have. So 12-year-old, hey, Justin, want to have sex? And Justin's like, okay. Oh, let's have sex. Come on, bro. First of all, you lying. Second of all, if you wasn't lying, you nasty. You nasty, Justin. You's a nasty bitch, boy. Justin, you's a bitch and a half. And you need your ass whooped. Well, she came on to me. Nah, bruh. Your dick got hard for a 12-year-old, bruh. Man, I would have left the whole house. Let's just, if a 12-year-old try me, if I'm me and my wife at my house, and as a 12-year-old family member of, let's say, you know, of the wife, and the 12-year-old tries to have sex with me, or any other family member that's not my wife try to have sex with me, I'm leaving the house. Or I'm going into the room with my wife, and I'm going to let my wife know, hey, this motherfucker trying to hunch me. I'm not going to be butt naked with my meat hard to my will. She had me there. I said, well, I ain't butt, bro. She has me there. I said, well, bro, she had me there. She had me that was the retarded sounds. The Justin is a retarded fuck who needs to be castrated. Hey man, I'm for castrating certain people like Justin. You know what I'm saying? Get him some mental counseling. But he need to be castrated. You've proven that you are not responsible. So you need to be castrated. You need to be relieved of all sexual anything. You need to be a non-sexual being and a unit, because you can't handle the responsibility of being an adult with sexual urges flowing through your body, because some reason you got a sexual urge for a 12-year-old. You got a whole wife in the bed. You got a whole wife in the bedroom, but let's just say, all right, you want to cheat. All right, you want to cheat. You a whole grown man. You a whole grown man. And you in Atlanta? Bruh, as many men who are in Atlanta who have HIV who are not into women, so you have an abundance of women in Atlanta, Georgia, who busting it wide open. And you go for the 12-year-old. Bruh, they should hold you down and just, boy, you need your motherfucker. I run over your face with my car. I run just your whole face. I would run over your whole face with my car and just park my car on your face, Justin. Just my whole car. Just park the whole car. I drive a truck, actually. I would park my whole truck on your fuck ass face, Justin. They should torture you. And you deserve to be tortured, Justin. Like, they should put your ass in hot. They should tar and feather you, man. Tar and feather you. You should get hit by a couple cars. I mean, they should make you walk on hot coals. They should castrate you inch by inch, piece by piece, centimeter by centimeter. You don't feel anything. Make you feel, I mean, you're not numbed whatsoever. You feel every inch of the pain that's been inflicted on you, because you feel like it's cool to inflict pain on helpless young girls, because you are a sick bastard. Justin, you are a sick ass bastard. You a sick bastard, Justin. You a sick bastard. Your parents should have, your mother should have swallowed. Your dad should have shot you on the floor. You didn't deserve to be conceived to be a human being. It's obviously you can't handle it. Obviously you've proven that you can't handle being a human being. You can't handle being a man. You can't handle having sexual urges. You can't just handle human interaction and human functions. Obviously you can't handle it, because you like to fuck 12-year-olds. You over there with Larry Nassar. Sick bastards. Me some sick ass bastards. Sick bastards. I bet you when you heard the story about that little fuck ass little basketball team, the wet dream team, I bet you started masturbating to the whole article you were reading about them little. You a nasty motherfucker. It's some sick bitches. It's some sick ass bitches in this world. Hey man, don't spend your whole life being a bitch. Don't be a bitch your whole life. At some point you gotta stop being a bitch. Right now you've been a whole bitch. Don't be a bitch your whole life, bitch. Stop being a bitch. Be a man at some point. Don't be no bitch your whole life. Be out here a sexual predator. Like this nigga said, this motherfucker walked in the living room, saw a 12-year-old sleeping on the couch and was like, oh shit, I'm trying to fuck. Think about it. This nigga walked into the room, saw a 12-year-old sleeping and was like, man, I'm trying to fuck. What grown, sane man, healthy mindset man does that? No adult does that. All you adults out here having sex with kids, you nasty motherfuckers. All you school teachers, these little white girl teachers out here having sex with these kids, you nasty motherfuckers. Nasty motherfuckers, man. I don't get y'all. I don't get y'all. I'm not trying to get y'all. All I know is, all you nasty motherfuckers, you sexual predators, you need to be castrated. If you're a man, be castrated. If you're a woman, have your coochie sewed up. Have your clit cut off and your coochie sewed up, whatever. But your asses don't deserve to experience real sexual pleasure because your asses ain't real human beings. Your asses some fucking bitches. That's what you is. Some sick bastards who parents should have fucking swallowed. Look, man, we got to do something different. We can't keep producing people who are sexual predators. How many more generations will we have that produces sexual predators? We need to get to the root of this shit, man, and stop producing these generations of sexual predators, especially in the black community. Especially in the black community. We ain't got no time for that bullshit. Hey, man, Merry New Year. Merry New Year. Happy, happy New Year. New Year. Hey, man. I know some of y'all got resolutions. Some of y'all got all types of stuff, man, goals and stuff. Get your plans together. Whatever you're trying to do in life, just goddamn do it. Do it. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared. Don't be acting all like that stuff. Just goddamn do it, man. Don't be no bitch about your dreams in 2019. Hey, you shouldn't have been a bitch about your dreams in 2012. But you know how people like to be gassed up for the new year. So, man, going to the new year, if you ain't going to do it, don't gas yourself up. Something you really want to do, do it. Shit, I want to start a sports podcast, and here we are. The Fix Sports Podcast. 2018, baby. I did a lot of good stuff. 2018 was good for me. It was good to me. I could have done better in a department with the ladies, with the romance department. I could have done a whole lot better. But 2019 got a lot of promise for me. So you know how I go, man. I am Joseph Ward. This is the Freedom Train Network. And this is the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest. Y'all have a good new year. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all's support. www.freedomtrainradio.com. Remember, support your boy on Patreon. www.patreon.com/thefix. Hey.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one that can match me. My style.